painted black. All colors work today as long as they are black. I see the ski swim by, they just don't want to bite. I pull the sewage
out. All right, folks, welcome to the Muskie 360 Podcast, a Jaybird.
Steve, what's going on?
Not much. Here we are, folks. We took off the Turkey Day weekend. Did you stuff your face all over the place, Jay?
I did not. How about you?
Me either. Not my cup of tea. I figured, you know, it's that time of year. Most of these people are out in the woods. They're trying to shoot themselves a dirt. You know,
a lot of that going on.
A lot of deer shooting. What's going on there as far as Jay? It's just locked up. It's over. It's done. It was the December 1. What's happening now? Yeah. Just seasonal depression clinics and people buying solar lights?
Yeah, it's been extremely cold. Yeah, it's been below normal temps for 2 weeks. So pretty brutal forecast. Got a lot of snow on the ground. They're starting to ice fish a little bit.
Really?
Very little bit. Yeah, some of the smaller lakes and some bays and stuff might have 4+ now.
Right.
Maybe some 6-inch stuff, but hey, you know, a guy was in, I think, Friday, and he said Trout Lake, which is a big lake in the area that I don't drive by. I haven't seen it with my own eyes, but he said it was wide open. But everything else I drive by on the way to and from work is locked up.
I should know this, but it's official closed December. No, that's Minnesota's. If somebody was on open water there, can they fish legally right now, Jay?
I believe so.
That's what I thought. Yeah, it's kind of. Yeah. How crazy are you?
Well, if it's a high of 15, it's dangerous. You know what
right.
I mean?
Yeah,
it's crazy. Herbie was doing some of that, southern Wisconsin. No, yeah.
I talked to him earlier this week. I said, this is stupid, dude. What are you doing? Well, it's fine. You know, he's just like. Still trying to do. He finally gave up the ghost there.
He gave her up?
Yeah.
Okay. Did he pound anything last couple of days? Or
I mean,
did
he got a couple fish, but it wasn't. I mean, the juice ain't worth the squeeze when it's that bad. I mean, it's when you're talking Misery Factory and, you know, come on. It's actually been cold down here. Kind of suckitude. Laughable temperatures for you, but, you know, when it's just not fun. Not fun the last couple of days. I've been catching, but it's been, you know, that period when you first get that serious cool down, everybody's talking about, late fall in the tight bite windows, like we, you know, mentioning all the time. It really starts to truncate, and you're like, oh gosh, must we be doing this? Just staring at the watch all day. And here comes, okay, is it the minor? Is it the major? Is it sunset? And that's the biggest thing I would say right now for, you know, your southern anglers and everybody was still open water because heck, UP's open wide, Jay. If you could fish it, you know, all this stuff. There's a lot of different situations here where you have open water, you're still fishing.
There's 30 inches of snow up there. But,
right.
You know.
Well, you could, though. You could.
I guess.
But I'm not quite referencing them per se. I'm saying if you have open season regulations, you got open water like southern anglers. It's that period a lot of people can't identify, but the most similar is that late fall period where you go, it's tight bite windows. That's the way it is until we get to the end of February, get to the beginning of March. And that's what you're looking at. And I'll probably, you know, we get into the holidays here after the first year. I'll kind of do a little, we always kind of do a little southerny thing there. Yeehaw. Kind of break that down, what's happening, but it's just this continuation. It's really funny to see that seasonality where it's that never ending late fall tight by windows. You're like, this is what we're doing, you know, that's it. So just a matter of getting dialed in and all that fun stuff. Let's look, at least because it was Black Friday, we went through Cyber Monday. Jay, did you happen to cyber on Monday?
I did.
You did. Fantastic. So it is the holiday season. They had the sale, and believe it or not, Jim the Tube Screamer Stewart has lost his mind, Jay. Wow. You got free shipping. If you couldn't get enough, if your uncle's daughter's boyfriend's cousin didn't get you what you want on Black Friday, you got free flat rate shipping. What is it? Orders over 25. The shocker.
Yeah.
It includes shield rods. So you got free shipping on rods or on the shield rod there. And there's still, I can't believe it, usually, Jay, the show, we kind of quietly put away the comings and the goings at the Muskie Shop over the winter because there's never stuff showing up. But there's still stuff showing up this year. It's crazy, which is these aren't in stock, but it's going to be neat. The Muskie Frenzy, the Ringer 8 and the Ringer 9. It looks like he lost his mind, folks, and went with Colorado blades.
Yep.
So what do we got going on? Okay. What is on that shaft, Jay? Is that a weight or is that a rivet or what do we have there? I'm seeing
kind of free floating sleeve.
Little shaft sleeve, if you will.
It creates a unique ringing sound. Nick told me about it, but I don't have video of it. We're going to have to try to get by a swimming pool or something this year.
Gotcha.
Yeah, we've got some cool new stuff I want to see underwater. You know what I mean? And that's Nick from Nick owns Muskie Frenzy Lures. That'll be coming out this winter, within the next couple months or whatever. So he's got some new color shakeups and some new rubber skirted models and stuff like that.
Guaranteed to blow your mind. No, it's cool. Well, at least he's doing Colorado blades. You know, he always has a unique blade combination there. What else we got here? The Daiwa. Okay, what's the difference? This Daiwa Lexa LX500, right? I remember, oh, goodness. I've got it sitting here somewhere in the bait cave. The other 500 Daiwa. It was the Daiwa. Was it a 500 TW, I believe?
No, I think it was an HD. I think the HD series came out with the first 500. But
okay, yeah, that sounds right. But it had the T-wing, the little drop-down T-wing, if I recall. Without digging it out of the box here on the shelf, I believe that model has the T-wing. Jay, am I crazy? You sit here and stare at them all day?
Oh, I do not sit here and stare at them all day. We've got...
Get out of the reels, Jay.
108 different Daiwas, I think we carry. I think you're right, though, on the 500. I think it's a T-wing deal. No, it's not. It's a standard. It's an HD series, okay. So what's like an upgraded.
Yeah, what's the difference? That's where I'm going here.
The main difference is going to be gear ratio. It's a high gear ratio on the new one. Yeah, I don't know. Internally, this thing's a little bit more economy priced and everything.
Gotcha.
It's a lot more economy priced. So yeah, 449. Same frame, big side, and it's not a heavy reel. You know, so we just got them in. They're not, you know what I mean? For 500 size, Shimano makes big 500 size. It's a fairly heavy reel.
Yeah, 340. So $100 difference here. What are we looking at? Okay.
It's only like 16 ounces. Yeah, so
40 inch per turn. For
oversized capacity and, you know, great torque and everything with a very high speed retrieve. It picks up a lot of line. So,
40 inches a turn. If you need a 1 pound reel, what we got here? What is this one weigh? Just looking here. It doesn't say. So, 40 inches a turn. I mean, it's slightly quicker than the HD here. But anyway. Interesting. Like I said, that's going to be, people ask Jay, that's why I'm thinking, what's the difference here? Obviously price point, $100. Really, I always look at 500. I know there's some guys who go, I live and die by 500. But for me, I always look at it as a specialist reel. I mean, if you're really going to go hog crazy with burning tins, right? You got to burn tins and you got to rip pounders. But that's a really,
right.
That's
big, a really big solid plastics, price. Very popular option. Sure.
Yeah. Interesting. So, goodness, and I think we're gonna have. Have you heard anything about any other reels?
Shimano's got some stuff coming out. It's secretive, but that's coming out sometime in January.
There you go. So
look for that. There will be a new release coming.
A new release, and then the other stuff you got with the bio. You got your bio bluegill and a wake rat. You can get the wake rat. What else?
You love those little rats and mice and stuff like that. Squirrels, chipmunks. Get them on top and let them eat.
No, thank you. Anyway,
I'm being sarcastic.
I'm good. I don't need the. You know, it's like it's one of those deals. After the freaking Savage Gear, that 3D duck, I've said it before. If I have to hear one more person ask if they eat ducks, I could really just wait, baby ducks. Yes, on rare occasion. But anyway, the other cool thing is this, and I do dig this. I checked these out at iCast when I was down in Florida this past summer. The Echo X Gear, however you want to pronounce it, these speakers, right? So is it Echo Cross Gear or is it Echo X Gear? Nonetheless,
I have no idea. I pronounced it Echo X Gear, and
right,
who knows?
That's what I'm going for.
I did a little video on it the other day. We turned that BB on. We dropped it in the sucker tank. Okay,
they're loud. These things are awesome. Yeah,
yeah, they crank, man. You could just sync it up and put on Spotify on your phone. Mm-hmm. I mean, if I can hook up my phone and sync the darn thing in less than 60 seconds and be playing music and blah, 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 anyone could do it. So now, even Elmer.
Yeah, like a lot of guys, if you do listen to music on the boat, I mean, I've had in the past the built-in systems. I used to have like a JBL setup, and I've had all these different built-ins, which is great, but once they go bad, it's a problem. I do dig this because you can actually do a stereo pair of these two. Bluetooth, which is kind of neat. I mean, it's
well, yeah, you don't have to worry about getting rained on, you know. They're tougher than nails.
Well, the problem with the outdoor speakers, the old one, what they would actually build the speaker cone out of, I mean, it's basically the same material you're building any speaker cone out of, but they're trying to make it, they never lasted, is what I'm getting at. Like, they were close, but the newer materials are so much better. You know, because what would always happen is your speaker cone would tear from itself on the old stuff. But
yeah, it used to be paper based. Yeah. I mean, it's only going to last X amount of time.
Right. It's water resistant, not waterproof. I get it. It wasn't good, but I got it. But yeah, that's kind of cool. That's a neat little accoutrement. Grab your coloring book and your Bluetooth speaker and have some fun this holiday season
before they're gone forever. Exactly.
Jesus. Criminy. Yeah. Other than that, Jay, I was going to give a call. You know, here we are. Actually, I'll defer to you. We have said it like three shows, 3 weeks in a row about doing a contest. Right. So need to give away some. Send this week. We'll do a Steve Stash. Just let's start off easy. Let's throw him a softball. Okay. Right. Whatever, just send it, and we got tons of Q&A. We'll try to get through more of it, but if you send in a fresh Q&A question, I don't care what it is, what color braid should I eat, whatever, we'll start that way while me and Jay, honest, remind me, Jay, hold my feet to the proverbial fire, if you will. We need to come up with something that's actually not suckitude for a contest, but send in this week, send in your Q&A. We'll pick a rando winner for a little bit of Steve Stash to get the prizes flowing, Jay. Sometimes it's like a bloodletting. Yeah. Get the leeches going, right?
You have to start somewhere,
Steve. You got to start. And then once we start it up there, we'll get some stuff going over here.
Then there's no stopping it.
There's no stopping it. Although, I do want to say this, because actually we're gonna talk to somebody here in a minute.
Go good.
I did. I cracked up. I sent Jay... Somebody sent in a message this week about their shop or their Spotify listens. And I did read this.
Oh, yeah.
Let me try to find it. Okay. Which one is this? All right. It doesn't have... Oh, his name is Steven as well. Or he's addressing it to me. Was it? I guess his name's Steven. What? 18,999 minutes, and I'm still dog crap. So I don't know. But they do. It's funny. I've gotten a few others this week of people's listens time. They do these wrap ups on the podcast. And it's much appreciated. You guys listen that much. I believe, Jay, on the top of my head, that's multiple days there. 18,000 minutes. That is about 13 days, I think. Rough math off the top of my head.
Is it?
Yeah.
That's rough math.
So the prize pack he wins is therapy. We've got you a therapist lined up in your hometown. He's going to talk to you. So there's got to be.
We got to get my prize pack just for that. Just out of the blue, wasn't even requested. Man, that was awesome.
That's where I was going. Send in if you've got. Here's what we'll do. This will be fun. So send in your Q&As for next week, and we'll draw out of that randomly. If you have any of your wrap up numbers, right? The bar is 18,000 hours. or minutes, excuse me, hours, 18,000 hours. The guy would, if you listen that much, you've got bigger problems. But
you're probably hospitalized.
Probably, it's probably the CIA has tied you up and played this podcast as torture. So it's part of MK Ultra 3 there, as they're just trying to get you to crack. But he's got 18,991 minutes. So Steven, send me your address there. I got your email here. So send me your address. I'll send you something out in the mail. If you got it, can you beat it? I need a screenshot. Can you beat it?
Great.
If you can beat it, send you a prize pack. If you got a six digit, that's 5 digits. So you got a 5 digit number, send me something. We'll go from there. Send me your screenshot. But that's shocking. Shocking, Jay. But
yeah,
I've set you up, Jay. It is the battle of the underwater musky footage coming up with Glenn McDonald. Hold tight.
No. Yeah.
All right, we got Glenn McDonald on here to fight with Jay over who has the best lure footage. Let's go, gentlemen. Go. What's your platform? What's your stance? I'm teasing, guys. Guys, if you don't know him,
I'm not saying nothing.
Nothing. If you don't know him, this is Glenn McDonald from 54 or Bust, man. Does awesome footage and does some killer underwater stuff there, and I always tease him about that. I think you guys, literally though, I mean that as a compliment, you guys have changed how a lot of people buy baits and see baits, to be honest with you. How long, like, I hear it all the time between the footage, so hats off to both of you joking about that. But how's it going, Glenn, in the great white north?
It is officially winter up here. We fished, I think our last day was in November 22nd, I believe. Mm-hmm. And there's a few guys that were out maybe a few days after that, but we're right into cold weather here, and everybody's kind of looking forward to ice fishing. I know some of the guys have been already ice fishing out on Indian Lake Chain. Yeah, we got 6-7 inches. So it goes so quick from open water right into basically winter up here. It seems like mm-hmm. there's no transition period. It's just, you got open water and then you got winter. It's just the way it is. But
right
to your point about the underwater footage, this is always a nice time of year for us to go back. We kind of batch record a bunch of stuff. So when, and Jay will know this, when you're set up to record underwater stuff, you have to prep everything you want. Everything set up so that you can
start
be efficient
notes,
while you're recording.
Jay. Start taking notes.
And you, well, I could probably get some notes from Jay, but I'm sure he'll back me up on this.
Get Tom on the
when
phone.
When you are doing it, you wanna make sure you have a lot of stuff set up so that you can batch record. And then in a lot of cases, I don't do much with it over the course of the summer, which is terrible. I should do more with it. But I know in the winter, and again, maybe Jay can back me up on this, guys that are going to the shows look for stuff like that underwater footage. And it is, it's a cool way to see exactly what a bait looks like in the water.
Absolutely. Yeah, Jay, I been doing it for a hot minute, and it's always, I mean, I look at it, I'm not even kidding, Jay's been doing that for eons, and we go out and drag something here and there, and I when I'm up there and he and Tom are doing it, but I still do that. I think, if you're looking at a bait, at least seeing what it's looking like on a straight retriever, what it looks like wet, which is super cool. So Glenn, as far as the year, I know you got a video, you'll probably do your big season wrap up, right? But not even bait wise, just what was your take this year? What was just your overall vibe? Like,
on fishing in general, you're getting at?
Yeah, I mean, just what was the, I mean,
yeah, yeah.
What, did you feel good about it? Did you feel it was did you know what I'm saying? Not that hey, they were eating this or they were eating that, just the overall take, just the overall vibe this year.
Well, not to interrupt too, but Glenn, is it true you live on the shores of Eagle Lake?
I don't live on the shores of Eagle Lake, but I'm literally 10 minutes away from the landing, 10 minutes away from Temple Bay Lodge, where my buddy Hunter's parents own it.
Okay.
So I have super easy access. My brother-in-law and my wife's sister own a cabin on Eagle Lake, a secluded island that they own themselves. So we get to spend a lot of time there. And anybody that knows us or has watched our channel knows we're right in the heart of it. 20 minutes to Cedar, 20 minutes to Wabagoon, 10 minutes to Eagle. Lake of the Woods is an hour. I haven't fished Lac Seul. It's on that list, but
let's fix
that's
that.
A little bit further yeah. out. Mm-hmm. But no, we're right in the heart of it here, Jay. So it's
amazing.
And where everybody wants to go on vacation, that's where we call home.
Yeah, very cool.
Except for right now. You gotta pay for it, you know.
There's, you choose to live there, he always tells
me. That's what I tell him. You choose to live there. So Glenn,
well, there are no mosquitoes right now, I will say yeah. that. And
there you go.
Back to your original question. I am just going through all our footage from 2025 mm-hmm. and we are doing something really cool with it this year. But when I just paint the season with like a broad stroke, I would say it was three distinct periods for us. Mm-hmm. We come out of the gate pretty strong. And I felt that end of June, right up to about that first week of August, when that first cold front hit, mm-hmm. I think things were average or above average, probably above average on the past few years because it has been a bit tougher up here. Mm-hmm. And then that first August cold front just really made things difficult. We got a week of wind. It was just it was pretty typical August weather. Yeah. And then we got through that. September was hit and miss. But then as October started, it felt like, again, maybe not classic typical fall, but really positive fall mm-hmm. conditions and fall bite for us. So it was kind of two great seasons bookend in between that kind of yeah. tougher, you know, midsummer cold front. Like you got to work for them.
With living right there, you know, obviously, heck, I spend a plenty of time up there, Danny, you know, the whole pool of people we pull from, which is funny. I just said that out loud. It made me think, Glenn, of eating a cheeseburger with you in the rain at a picnic table with Steve Herbeck and Dr. Bob. And I like, guys, if you want to know how awesome it is to be a professional muskie angler, that summed it up. We just needed that. We needed the song. Remember the song from Donnie Darko? All around me are familiar. Just sad. It was just sitting in the rain, eating a cheeseburger. But
well, he got to meet Dr. Bob in the flesh, though. I mean, that's a season.
I did.
That's a seasonal that's a pinnacle highlight. Right there, baby. Yeah.
He did his taxes for him. But no, I... To the point though, where I was going to go is here. You said you had a great early season, you're going to have a great late season. The last few years for me, it is like July and August have not been the best. And I almost ask I don't know if it's a loaded question or not, but the height of muskie tourism is July and August. July, probably the highest, really, historically, right? Are people missing the mark on their timing? Because it feels like it's just becoming the end of July, the beginning of August is almost kind of anymore. What's your thoughts there as far as like, is it different or are they missing that mark?
I think it's different post-COVID. And I think we look at it as that pre-COVID, post-COVID. My wife at her shop, like at Bobby's Sports Shop, would probably break it down the same mm-hmm. as like the tourism side of it. I'm sure the tourism operators would kind of see it the same. There's a lot of people up here right now, and muskie fishing specifically, there's a lot of newer anglers mm-hmm. that are, whether they're trying the sport, you know, one time and then they're out, or they're going to try it for, you know, maybe a season or two. And I do think that we're seeing a lot of people here in that classic summer period. Mm-hmm. This year, though, we did see a lot more people later in the year than years past. And I would say pre-COVID, by September 20th, it was pretty much done for all the tourist camps. You had your Andy Myers and oh, maybe the Jaeger boys would have some guys in on Eagle, but like Cedar, there was nobody. It's changed, and I think the demographics changed. Obviously, a lot of the muskie anglers are a little bit older. They don't have to worry about
getting back to work or something.
Yeah. Like, getting back to work. So they're coming a little bit later in the season, and I just think guys are cluing into, hey, these are going to be good periods. I got to be out there. But you're always going to have that summer rush, which it just makes it tough on the lakes. Like some of our lakes are getting a lot of pressure for us. And I know a lot of the guys from Wisconsin and Minnesota will just roll their eyes. But we're seeing it up here where, it's a lot more.
That as Jay can attest, he lives right. I mean, Minocqua, where the muskie shop is, another big, tourist destination and pressure. But I think you and I talk on the boat this year. I think we talked about it, Glenn, or at some point about noticeable, dramatic higher levels of pressure where, for me, run down the east side of Eagle, I'd see some people coming out of Century. You come through Boulder, there's kind of nobody there. There's, you look out there, there's a boat on Dead Indian and there's a boat on Wendigo, and that's about the extent of it. Okay, that was normal. Now you go out there, you come out into the big water, and you go, there's a boat there, there's a boat there, there's a boat there, there's, during that July August period for me, I've been going up there for eons, and you just go, whoa, that's different. Or some of these big, you're coming out of Myers or some of these big long runs, and you start counting how many boats you pass, it's shockingly high. So yeah, pressure's definitely up for sure. You're not crazy there. And I mean, I don't think it's that different than the Northwoods in some capacity of just probably a different skill level showing up on some of this stuff. Not to nag out on it when I don't think we should name the names of the lakes, but some of the smaller lakes, is it not shocking how many people are over there?
Well, I think everybody knows Cedar Lake's just been getting beat up.
Yeah,
the last few years. And to your point, it's a lot of good anglers ending up on Cedar. A lot of A-listers are getting up there, and there's just nowhere to hide for those fish out there anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're still catching fish, and that's one of our favorite places to fish is Cedar and Peralt, just because it's got the numbers, the size, the different structure. But these lakes, it's not Eagle. It doesn't have the real estate of Eagle, so it does get busy out there, and it was busy right up until mid-October out on Cedar, which is, like I say, pre-COVID, you wouldn't have seen that, or certainly not to that extent. Like pre-COVID, when Sarah come up here in September, may have been one or two musky boats on the water that week or that weekend, and we were probably the other one. Like that's just the stark contrast that we're seeing right now.
Let me ask you this, and I'm just we're just riffing here. Just if it continues, right? If it continues, that level of pressure, we see this, it doesn't decline, it only gets to be more because of people like yourself, people like Jay, people like Wagner, that are here's this information. Everybody's trying to help everybody catch fish at the end of the day, right? Which it's almost like a self-fulfilling thing. Is it a matter, do you think you're going to, to be successful, we have to push to new water, or is it just everything's fair game because of social media, because of podcasts, because of this, that it's just, this is the new norm? Does that make any sense?
It does. And it's something that we've thought about since we started putting up content, and we're just a small fish in the big pond when it comes to content. And I think a lot of people look at YouTube and it's like, oh, these guys are just giving everything away for free. But my average videos get, 4,000 or 5,000 views, where when Sarek used to come up here and put out a Muskie Hunter show, he would get 200,000 views on a weekend. So we have to be careful putting blame on social media or YouTube or Danny Herbeck posting a picture of, a spot sees.
Oh, let's blame Danny for everything. So, Danny, you're the problem. call me, so, bitch boy.
I think we have to be careful, worrying about that. Right. And at the same time, I think the average muskie angler wants to come up here and catch more fish, and he wants to learn, and he wants to watch Doug Wagner's videos and ours and all the other ones out there to try and learn how to do a better job up here, because it is freaking hard up here to catch fish. And this year was a little bit better because I think overall the fish were more tuned into a bucktail bite, which makes it easier for the average angler. Years past, when it was tougher fishing, it was a lot more dive and rise, a lot more rubber, a lot more of that pull, pause, get it down in their face, maybe crankbaits. And that makes it tough for people that, you know, just want to run and gun. So I think when the fishing becomes a little easier, just based on, you know, whatever the conditions were this year, it allows people to come up here and have success. Will the pressure wreck the spot? I don't know. We've seen pressure. I've talked to guys like we talked in the boat, me and Herbie, you know, he's seen the pressure come and go over the years too. And I think we always have to be mindful of where we're at in a cycle and not instantly blame, you know, whatever it is, that this is why it's tough this year, this is why the fish aren't here.
Yeah, I mean, it's never, I've always kind of looked at it kind of from standpoint of, it is what it is, you know, and it's not maybe good or bad. It's just, it, you know, there are more people, there's more pressure. You gotta make changes. I mean, this year, definitely there was, like you said, more of a straight retrieve bite, things of that nature. But I mean, what are some of the other bites that you saw this year that were, you know, help elevating past? Because, and I ask, it's a loaded question in some capacity, because the amount of people that were reaching out to the podcast, reaching out to me directly, like, hey, I'm here for my week, right? And I'm talking cedar as well. I haven't seen one. Or we had one miss and it's day 4 or 5, right? So how are you balance? I'm not asking you to balance the pressure, the dynamic of the pressure, but how are you overcoming the pressure? And then what other things were working, say, on that chain or work for you at this season to kind of get over slumps of pressure, if that makes any sense?
I'm just working on what's going to turn out to be episode 3 of the summer's kind of activity. And in this episode, I touch on this exactly. And the guys had been up for 3-4 days before I went out fishing with them. And they were struggling. They hadn't boated a fish, and they were seeing fish in the shallower weeds. So instantly, my thought process is, that's where a lot of people that haven't spent a lot of time up here, they just look for the shallow weeds because that's the easiest thing to find. It's the easiest thing to fish. It's the easiest thing to orientate yourself on a body of water. And I told the guys, I'm like, going back over the past few weeks, and we're talking early in the season, when I see a lot of pressure on a spot, and, you know, say it's a big spot on cedar like Hatfield Bay, well-known spot, full of weeds. We almost never fish it because there's 2 or 3 boats just going all day long through there. These guys were fishing that type of spot. I'm telling them, okay, we got to move off that spot, got to get out to the first, you know, main lake break, whether it's a point or a reef or whatever it is, and we got to get away from that pressure and get out to open water, open basin adjacent areas. And we went out, we got a 49, and then they went out later that day or the next morning, they got a 49.5, almost on the exact same structure. And when we were doing the wrap-up interview, I'm like, so where are you guys going to fish for the rest of the week? And they're like, on the rocks. And I'm like, why? Because they're like, the fish are out there. Had I not fished with them, I think there's every possibility that they would have never contacted those fish, because they don't have the historical knowledge, I guess, to move out there. And it's not easy if you don't know the water. And I guess that's why you hire a guide. And that's also why you try to be willing to explore. I think too many of us get caught up, I'm just going to pound this structure because I know we're going to see fish in the weeds. And it doesn't matter where you go. And I mean, you fish eagle enough with Herbie to know that you can go pound those community spots. Those fish are going to show, but they're very rarely ever going to eat because they've seen everything. So that's the way we kind of approach it. It's not completely move from that part of the lake. It's just make adjustments from, you know, the A spot.
It's so spot on, which is, if you, the assumption, and it kills me, the assumption that you have the magic bucktail to go in the community weeds that have been pounded for the last month.
Right, right.
You know, getting past that, which is just huge. You know, I mean, it, you know, makes sense. What, Glenn, what kind of stuff are you using? Is that like a tube bite on those breaks or like a Red October? Or what's kind of the, for a canyon bite when you're getting out on the structure?
So historically, that would have been put on a 10-inch Red October tube and just pound away and you're going to catch. Mm-hmm. This year, I was throwing rubber from the back of the boat. I was throwing some diving rise, you know, whether it was like the Titan or a Suic, mm-hmm. Some of that boutique stuff, just trying something different. And we would move some fish with that start, stop, pull, pause presentation. I threw the double pit bull a lot early mm-hmm. on. I think I caught one fish on it all year. We could see them come in on the scope and they just weren't interested in that start, stop. And I would throw the guys at the front on a bucktail and they would just catch. So it was a case of, it didn't matter if we were sitting over 35, 40 feet of water and the fish was suspended down 15 or 20 off of that break. And that fish might be 50 feet off of the structure. That fish chased up and chased a bucktail and ate. A lot of cases they ate at the boat. A lot of cases they ate out. Some they would eat partway in. Like, they were tuned into speed and the ability to get on top of something and pull it off super quick. And mm-hmm. for the most part, that was the bite all year. And for me, I love rubber. I love throwing rubber from the back of the boat. And it just never really happened for us this year. It always turned out to be just clip on a bucktail and go fast.
Hey, can't beat that. Even it's, but like you're saying, I mean, if it's 20 feet, that's nothing, a flick of the tail, even if it's laying on bottom out in that structure, you know, to come up, you know, instantaneously. But, you know, it's so funny, and it's such a weird kind of angle where you have to go, okay, contending with the pressure on some of these bodies of water. I don't want to speak for you. I don't think it's going to change. I think guys are going to have to stay inventive. Would you agree with that? You're going to have to progressively stay on top of your game to be successful in your neck of the woods?
I would say yes. And I would say you have to be willing to get out of your comfort zone a little bit. And I was guilty of it this year too. We got comfortable fishing off a structure and we were getting fish. But then when we got that first cold front in August, the fish moved. Mm-hmm. Half the fish went like way off the structure, like just out in the basin, and the other half went super tight. And so a lot of those fish out in the basin, we didn't, you know, we're not chasing them. We don't go scoping for them like that. But we did try a little bit of trolling with very limited success. So we just focused on getting, you know, super tight, but still to that really deep breaking style of structure. And I just think you have to be really open to trying to, you know, pick a spot apart when it's pressured. You can't just go in and throw 10 casts over top of a reef and think that you covered it, because that's just not going to work up here anymore. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. That great. I like how you put that. That's not going to work anymore, which is for, you know, some people that are veteran Canadian anglers, you got to forget about the glory days. And I'm sure you've run some clients like that, and I've got friends that are calling me, hey, I'm over on Eagle, or hey, I'm here, I'm throwing, you know, they've got their still their original set of, you know, black nickel double tens that they had in the late '90s, and they're not changing it up. You know what I'm saying? It's like, well, this caught
and you can't forget about what, you know, happened last year, because the year before up in Canada, I mean, we talked to, you know, Danny Herbick about that. Glenn, I mean, that sounded like a completely different bite. You know, it wasn't a bucktail bite. And Danny mm-hmm. was like, man, we never had a shallow bite. It was cooler year. Just a completely different scenario, right?
Danny Herbeck's boat is never closer than 500 yards from the shore, Jay. That's why he hasn't thrown it a bucktail in 2 years.
Well, let me bring this up, yeah, because I think this is a good point. You kind of mentioned it off the back of what I said about fishing deeper. We see a lot of the local guides, the Danny Herbecks, the Cal Ritchies, mm-hmm. Hunter McDonald from Temple Bay, you know, Tony Jaeger. These guys are fishing open water structure, and they're so far off of the structure that when you drive by, you're like, they have to be walleye fishing or yep. something way out there, because there's no way that they're musky fishing. And yet these guys have figured out that that second, you know, that first, second, or even sometimes third break area of these big, huge, complex open water structures. And we see so many guys come up here and they want to just sit up on top of the structure. And I know that's a just a big generalization, because it's not, you know, not everybody, but we see it so often that guys come up here, and if there's a white buoy, they want to cast to it on top of the rock. If there's a weed line, they want to be right up on top of that weed line. And it's making those little adjustments and being off of structure. And when I fish off of structure with people and they're like, what are we doing way out here? Like mm-hmm. there's a string of reefs up on Peralt that, like, you were in no man's land. It's 50 feet deep all around you, and you're casting up on a 25-foot walleye hump, and guys are like, what are we doing here? And I'm like, the fish are here. Yeah. And they're like, we just can't target fish 20 feet deep. I'm like, 20 feet is from where I'm standing to the trolling motor at the front of my boat. That fish is 4 feet long. That's one tail kick, and yep. it's going to cover that water to the surface, never mind to your lure. And I think we've been tempered to believe that 20 feet is deep, and it's up here, it's just not deep. No. When you put it in context of 50, 60, 70 foot deep basins, 20 feet is absolutely nothing. And almost all of our big shield lakes have that 12 to 20 foot break line around all the shorelines. Mm-hmm. And you have to find that style of complex structure. And I think that's where a lot of, you know, the quote unquote weekend anglers kind of go wrong, is that they come up here and you think you can just pound shoreline and you're going to have success. You're going to run mm-hmm. into fish. There's no doubt. You're going to find fish that I'll never find, but you want to find those bigger quality solitary fish. You have to get away from structure. Like you said, what Danny does.
Yeah. And I mean, it's heck. I mean, it's just the play that everybody, you know, I think it's just from time on the water and guiding, as you learn. I hate the word spot, but for in, you know, lack of that, people go, here's the spot, right? Here's walleye rock number 73, and they understand that first edge. And it's like, you know, whether it be whatever the book or videos we've done about structure fishing is like expanding from that. And Glenn, what you're getting at, it's often a hard sell for somebody to believe that a muskie is not using the top of that rock, but he's using that transition that is 30 yards off of it, which is just,
that is,
we're giving you the juice right here, folks. Take notes.
That is the hardest sell in musky fishing yep. in today's world, is trying to convince somebody that you're in the right spot by looking like you're so far off of the mm-hmm. better spot. And that yep. is so hard to get through a client's mind. It's so hard to get through, you know, somebody that you're talking to through a video, through you know, an article in a magazine, or through the 360 app. It's so hard to get that through to somebody mm-hmm. because the only way you see it is to see it in the flesh and believe it. And I urge people to go out with some of the anglers that, you know, are in your group network that, you know, fish a little bit different. Have that confidence fishing deep. And like, I'll be totally honest, we did not have confidence doing that 5, 6, 7 years ago. And it was through talking with guys like Cal Ritchie and Cal saying, you guys got it. Wherever you think you need to sit to cast up, you need to be one casting distance mm-hmm. back to start with. And then you can always work your way up. And we yep. talk about that lots. And like, I take no credit for it, because guys like Herbie have talked about it for years. But it, again, you can beat somebody over the head with it, but unless you're willing to trust yourself, trust your own judgment, it is the hardest sell mm-hmm. in musky fishing right now. And it's probably the one area that when people start to learn it, I don't want to say exploit it, but figure out how to do that on your home water, on your trips to wherever you're coming on the shield, you might not catch as many fish number-wise, but you're going to contact just those quality fish mm-hmm. that don't see everybody's wedding ring going by all day long.
That's a well put. Yeah, there it is in the eight. You know, it's so funny. Like everybody with, like you said, Danny, Herbie, everybody, yourself, you got somebody in the boat here. I'm in Tennessee doing the same thing. And you just, where are we throwing at? And it, you know, again, while we're harping structure, I harp structure. I think, Glenn, to your point, is when you have the first success with that, it changes how you interpret a map, right? I remember,
totally.
The crux of, and I'm not trying to pitch a book, Glenn, but like one of the main things
Hang on.
No worries.
My dog is barking at the deer outside. Sorry about that, guys.
It'd be more funny if you said your family was being attacked by wolves. It's another wolf attack. Get the gun. How Canadian
the wolves
is he,
are
folks?
Around, but they won't come out in the daylight.
He was just watching a VHS copy of Hockey Night in Canada, and there came the wolves. But, you know, beating structure, I feel like me and Jay have beat structure fishing for years. You know, just like you said, trying to convey people, and like, you see it. It's like how you conceptualize there's a hump, right? And I think everybody focuses on, they see structure on the map and they're looking at that very, 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 very top spot, you know, and Glenn, I don't know if you ever dealt with people, but something I always tell people is like, if you're trying to get comfortable doing this, work your spot, boat positioning the way you always would, but cast to the open water, right? So your one cast,
that works.
Yeah, your one cast off of what you're comfortable with. Now turn around. And after you have that first follower, that first eat doing that, go, oh, they are there. Like, it's like trying to pitch religion. You know what I'm saying? Just have faith, folks. For if you believe, right? You can't see it, but you can feel it. You know. So.
I think the problem in today's world, and God, I didn't even want to bring this up, but I think as soon as you tell people we need to fish off a structure, we need to fish deeper, they instantly go to forward-facing sonar and, oh, you're just doing that. And
no.
That's not what we're talking about here. I use forward facing sonar. I don't hide it. We use it as part of what we do. It's like real time side imaging. You know, that's how we use it. I don't hide it in any of our videos, but I think a lot of people, as soon as you say you have to fish deeper, it's that negative thought of, oh, I don't want to catch a fish deep because people are going to think, you know, I'm doing something wrong or I'm leaning towards the forward facing sonar. We have to get past that debate, because this was years ago. I think it was Bill Hamlin's book, 30 Days on the Shield or 30 Days, whatever the name was. He talks about fishing out at the other side of the boat. And this isn't a new concept.
No.
It's just, it's again, it's that concept of come to Canada, just pick a shoreline on Cedar Lake, you know, like just using Cedar as the example, pick a shoreline. And instead of casting to shore, or better yet, buddy at the front of the boat can cast to shore, and the guy at the back just cast out to the deep water with a suic or a bulldog or a Medusa, whatever you guys are comfortable with, a tube, and just slow pull, pause, rip it, and give me that for a week. And at the end of the week, your buddy casting to shore maybe caught 2-1 to you. But you got a 50 and a 49 so fat that, like, you're going to show your friends and they're going to think that it's 56. Like, that will happen, but you have to buy in. And it's, again, I know it seems like we're just beating this, you know, beating a dead horse here. But you can't learn it unless you actually go out and do it. That's the long and short of it.
Yeah, it's not a – I don't think it's a beat. I think it's, like, super quality advice, but like you're saying, of it's that fear. You know what it is? It's the fear of going up there and not catching fish. It's the fear of, if I do something different, am I foregoing my chance at the fish I have in my head?
Mm-hmm.
I think that's half the time, sometimes just switching baits for people. you know?
Let me tell you a story here, Stephen, about
let me get the cocoa.
The wrong thing. Okay, sit down here, folks, and you got to take notes here.
Absolutely. Your pen, Jay. Get your freaking pen out. I know he's not taking notes.
So when we, very first time we ever started to go sucker rigging, we knew zero. We knew less than zero. Mm-hmm. I talked to Pete Maino on the phone for like 10 minutes. He's like, yeah, you can rig it like this and just go where you think the fish are and cast and you guys will catch them. And we knew nothing. So we just went to the lakes we knew and we didn't want to cast. It's too freaking cold to cast. We were like, oh, we see a lot of bait here on the 2D sonar. Couple things that look like muskies, and we started catching muskies, and that was 10 years ago, whatever it was. And to this day, I could count on probably one hand how many times we cast while we sucker rig. And in northwestern Ontario, everybody just runs a sucker behind the boat while one or two people cast up front. We do it completely different. We bring our suckers to the muskies. We don't cast and try to bring muskies in. And we knew nothing, and we somehow figured out how to go out there and catch fish by doing it our way. But when we started, we were scared shitless because we're like, we are probably going to catch nothing because nobody's casting.
Right.
We're probably going to get just like ridiculed if anybody actually sees what we're doing. And somehow those first couple of years, we figured it out. And the 1 year... from October 2nd, Dave got a 50 on Eagle to start our fall run. And I think our last fish was November 27th that year. And we got about 70 fish and probably 65 of them were on suckers. Oh. And it was doing it the way we figured out how to do it. But we went in scared shitless, not knowing if this was going to work. And it worked out good for us. It could have went the other way and we could have had a year where we caught two fish, but we were willing to figure it out on our own and come up with a system that works.
In essence, leading with the sucker as opposed to it being a follow-up role.
So what we do, Jay, is we historically know on three or four of our lakes, and I'll be completely honest, Eagle isn't one of them. We have never dialed in this style of a sucker bite on Eagle, just to put that out there. But we go to where the whitefish and the Cisco start to school up prior to their spawn in the fall. And we can watch almost in real time over the course of 2 weeks as that bait fish start to school into those bays, into the areas where they're going to spawn. And then you start to see the muskies coming in. And of course, now with forward-facing sonar, you can see 5, 6, 7, 8, 10, 12 muskies using a small bay the size of a football field. They're in there chasing that whitefish and Cisco's, and we get in there and we start to bring our suckers to the muskies. We drop them down basically on their head. I know you guys have talked about this on the podcast before. Mm-hmm. And we always run, you know, if we got two guys in the boat, we got two suckers. We got three guys, we got three suckers. We might have one hanging up higher, but generally speaking, we always got them on weights and we're getting them down to them. Mm-hmm. And it's a bite that we figured out. And then it ends just about as quick as it started. You all of a sudden, all that bait is gone out of those bays. It's spawned out. It's moved back to the basin. For us, you might catch a couple fish using suckers, but now everything's dispersed out over that basin. And then we transition into that, you know, that last 2 weeks of the season or 3 weeks of the season trolling bite. That's what's worked for us. So it's a little bit of a different mindset there, Jay, and the fact that we're not using it as that classic decoy.
Yeah. Are you been
basically 40 to 50 degree water is when it's hot.
Yeah.
And then you get past that, and then that bait moves out. Go ahead, Steve.
I was just going to ask, when you're doing that, are you just like playing the wind in, or are you actually using the trolling motor to guide it?
Oh, we're trolling motor. We're moving around at like 0.3 to 0.7 and just trying to stay, you know, right with the bait. Mm-hmm. I'll just look up my notes here quick. From this fall, we, our sucker bite pretty much started around November 1st when the water temp was like at 50. Mm-hmm. And we had a solid week of sucker bite until, where did we change to trolling? When the water was down to about 46 or 45 is where that sucker bite just kind of ended for mm-hmm. us, and the bait had all dispersed. So if I look back through my notes over the years, you kind of look for 52 degrees is things are going to start happening. Yep. And then again, you get into that 46, 47, things are going to start to end. This year was weird because we had like this really long drawn out period where it stayed 49 degrees, 48 degrees for a lot longer than we would have expected. So you see that bait fish push up, then they pull off. 2 days later, they push in, they pull off. And again, it's all about time on the water for us, just having, you know, log books and historical knowledge of it. It's tougher for people when they come up here for one trip of a year, especially if it's in the fall time. If you miss those, you know, the right temperature or the bite windows, and everybody knows the bite windows in the fall are super tight. Like you get 20 minutes, maybe an hour, once or twice a day. And it's just, so much of it falls on, you know, past knowledge.
Yeah. Glenn, how would you break it down? So we got the big three, right? Eagle, Loxel, Leg of the Woods. I know you don't spend a tremendous amount of time on Leg of the Woods. You've musky fished over there, correct? Have you spent any time on Lake of the
Woods?
Just making sure.
Yeah, we did the Muskie Cup a few years there, so we got a pretty good knowledge of that Savascon Bay
and
area.
And you know Thatcher, and you got enough intel over there. Honest opinion, say a guy, and there's some dude sitting in Pennsylvania going, I want to fish Canada. Where does he go, realistically? Like, if the goal is, I want to just catch fish, so we're looking for quality and numbers. Because I'm biased. I'm Eagle through and through. What's your take living right there in the middle of this?
I always ask people, do you understand your goal of the trip? Is the goal to catch a bunch of muskies and learn? Then go to Lake of the Woods. You're going to catch a bunch of muskies. You're going to learn. You're going to have a chance at some big ones. But I would say the Savascon Bay and over by like Monument Bay, the angle, that's probably the least shield lake waters in northwestern Ontario. Just the way the topography is, the islands are a lot of that rounded rock. You don't get that the deep basins like you do up in, say, Whitefish Bay. So it is a little bit different. If you're looking for numbers, action, and a shot at, you know, maybe one big fish, Lake of the Woods, you're gonna just get more chances. If you want like the whole experience of what a classic shield lake is, just come and fish Eagle Lake. Like, just get on that center section of Eagle and spend a day in each section. Go south, spend a day around Temple Bay, you know, that main basin, Hiding's Point and Coleman. And then you have to spend a day on the West Arm just to experience what a 90 foot basin is and seeing a 54 or 55 inch blonde come out of like 60 feet and you have no idea where she come from.
And no chance at catching her.
No chance at catching her.
None.
Those are the ones you go back for. And if you want to test your mental fortitude, and I haven't yet, go to Loxul. There's absolute giants up there. More people are starting to fish there. I think it's becoming, again, I'm just going off what I see on social media and talking to friends that fish there. I think it's getting a little easier. Guys are starting to figure out, you know, where some of the quote unquote average fish for up there live. But everybody's seen that video from John and Ashley Holmstrom from last year, that absolute railway tie coming through the water.
Yeah.
And that's enough of a draw right there. And a quick story on Eagle Lake. Kyla and I were out there fishing the West Arm 5, 6, 7 years ago, trolling in late fall. And we're out in front of, I think the guys call it Booker Island, out in front of the entrance to Iowa Bay.
Yeah.
We're in like 70 feet of water. And Kyla's rod goes off and it's just zinging. It's just like wicked tuna, just pulling line. And she's like, I think I'm hung up. I'm like, you are not hung up.
Yeah, we're 60 you just feet hooked
Moby Dick. Yeah. And I got the boat out of gear. She just started to lean into it, and her rod literally did like the wicked tuna, just
doink, doink.
And that's what we got. But those are the shots you take out there. It's like you're going to get one or two shots a week out there, but oh man, those shots out there are
freaking good. I mean, Glenn, that's the thing is, heck, maybe this next summer we'll jump in my rig and go up there I have seen demons in Wapezi Bay. You know, like, what is that? I don't even know if I say the bay name right, but you go past Chamberlain there. You know what I'm talking about? Past Chamberlain there. Yeah,
yep.
You go, what is that? Is that a muskie still? It's mortifying. I mean, what's the biggest flat out? I'll ask you a loaded question. What's the biggest that you know of for sure, credible sources, Luxel?
I don't even know. I know Greg Attard's caught a couple of those mid-50s, 54, 56s. Mm-hmm. I think Ben Beattie's got a couple up there. The thing with the Luxel fish is they're built like river fish. They just have that fall build to them, mm-hmm, all year long. Yeah. I think just because of the current, they're just special fish. I mean, I got to get up there. I got buddies that live in Sulacoat. Like, mm-hmm, I have to get up that way and spend some time there. There's something special about those big Canadian shield fish. I've been wanting to get up on the English River, mm-hmm, fish for some of those river fish. You get on the west arm of Eagle, and even when you see a 50 on the west arm, they're just built different. They're just bigger and heavier. Peralt Lake, it's like Cedar's got really nice fish, but you get up into Peralt, which is connected, and it's just a deeper basin. It must have that, you know, that richer Cisco forage base. And 2 years ago, I seen the biggest fish of the season up on Peralt, and it chased up on a fouled cast tube that fouled up on itself. I was so pissed. It just comes shooting up. Yeah. It rolled at the boat, and both me and the fellow that were in the middle, we both looked at each other and we both were like, holy effing hell. Like, yeah, what the hell was that? And it was one of those mid 50 class, just like
juggernaut.
We only get to see those. Like, I see like one a year, maybe. Mm-hmm. They just don't live everywhere up here. So like those ones are flipping special, and I've yet to catch one of those absolute giants. So when you see it, you remember that crap.
Hey, explain if somebody doesn't know, you just said something segue. Cause I've had people ask, and I've had to explain what 54 or bust means. And a lot, if you're not to me, I knew, you know, okay. Yeah. The first time I heard, I went, yeah, I know what he's explain what that means, Glenn.
So when we started doing the musky content on social media, I wanted it to be a brand name. I didn't want it to just be me. I wanted it to be something that collectively talked about our group of anglers. Mm-hmm. And I ran through a bunch of different names, and I have them all wrote down, and I got a bunch of artwork that we come up with. And just one day I was just thinking, you know what? 54 inch is the legal size limit on all of the major bodies of water in Northwestern Ontario. There is a couple that are shorter size limits. And again, nobody keeps muskies, or we hope they don't. So that 54 inch was the size limit. That's the whole nother topic.
I got a story for you.
I got
a story from 98 for you, buddy. You ever seen an Indian gun punch a guy? Yeah.
So we thought, okay, there was 50 inch club. There's a bunch of stuff on that 50 inch benchmark. And I was like, I got to come up with something different. And then, I don't know, it was probably off the back of like seeing one of those bumper stickers where it's like Vegas or bust. And yeah, I was just like, it's 54 or bust. And I know we kind of shoehorned ourselves into like a corner there if we ever catch one bigger, but we're like, as musky anglers, we all want to catch a 50. We get that. But in Ontario or here, it's we want to catch a legal. That's mm-hmm. like what people talk about on Eagle Lake. It's like, I want to catch the legal. And we just come up with 54 busts. I come up with the logo design with the fish in there. And this fall, we come up with another one with a moose head inside of there. Because, again, a 54-inch moose is kind of like a benchmark moose. My wife's been close twice. So that's where that came from. It's just it's that hunt for that legal-sized muskie. And I think it's just about unattainable enough that you have to work really, really hard mm-hmm. to get there. So to me, that was just, it was fitting. And again, I didn't want it to be about me. I wanted it to be about us, our brand, our group of, you know, people that I work with. And I just thought it was a lot better way than just being Glenn McDonald Fishing, because nobody cares what I do.
well, people do, but I love the name because yeah, here it is. He gets the 54. Then it's going to be, what's a trophy perch? You can move on after that, right? I don't think you're quitting when you get your 54, but you know, gosh,
this channel goes to 11.
His goes to 11. Yeah. 62 or bust. Let's see. I'm just trying to think of how many legals I know of this year. I know of three. How many legals do you know of, Glenn? Real deal legals.
This year, yeah. I think I heard of two for sure on Eagle that I heard of, and I also heard of one on Wabagoon that I'm not 100% certain, but I come from a pretty good source. And then I heard of one or two on Lac Seul that I would say is pretty legit. I think Darcy Cox just caught one recently on Woods. So there's, I would say on average, the whole area, maybe there's six a year. Eagle, there's two a year, one or two. Some years there's maybe three or four. I know guys throw that term around legal pretty often. I think in today's world, if you're not showing people a picture of it on a bump board and it's legit, I think anybody can make a picture look good enough for people to believe it looks 54. I think we got to see proof on the bump board. So maybe there's some legals out there that are just not quite legal, but I think on average six a year from our area.
I was going to say probably whole thing is, my guess would be if we don't have the cross pollination of, you know, you don't know everybody that walks through the store or Bobby's but I'm guesstimating in the boat, you know, old Walleye and Larry got one or whatever, 10 a year of how high that bar really is. I mean, I'm talking about the major lakes, 10, I bet you get caught a year. Of how big that fish is.
I think that's pretty fair. And I do think that a lot of people come up here expecting to have a shot at a 50-inch fish. And I think that's realistic on a lot of bodies of water. But a 54 class fish it's just another thing altogether. Different. And you can't come up here with the expectation that they're just going to show up. And I know a couple of guys come up to Eagle 2 years ago and we were talking kind of candidly about it. And these guys hadn't been up here for a bunch of years. They're pretty good sticks. And I was like, well, what's your expectation for, you know, for the week, you know, not being here for a while. And they're like, well, you know, we hope to catch 10 or 12 and, you know, one or two 50s. I was like, ooh, that's a pretty tall order. Like, you know, guys like Danny and Herbie go into a week thinking that, and that doesn't happen for them all the time. No. So I'm like, I like to put the expectations up there, but I think we also need to be, you know, be realistic. I think you said earlier, Steve, it's not like the old days. And a lot of guys that used to come here would say, and one guy that I took out fishing this year, he said, I used to come up to Indian Lake Chain and we'd catch 10 a day. And I'm like, yeah, I remember that too. I'm like, that does not happen today. That's not anywhere close to how things happen. And I do think pressure is one thing. I think angling knowledge is another. We got a lot of really good anglers out there now. So guys that get good chances are capitalizing, and those fish get stung once or twice in the summer. And they realize that, hey, that big toughy boat up there, that's bad news.
That's bad news.
Stay away from the toughy boat. Yeah.
All those so sounds.
It's a number of factors, right?
Yeah. I mean, you say that, and again, it's not a good thing or a bad thing, but you talk about Indian, and, you know, just spending my summers on Eagle there for so long, it's like even when that would get tough, you'd get up to Indian, and you felt there was nobody. You know, like once or twice a summer, we might scoot up. You know, it's bad cold front, and here's a middle of a bad cold front. You go into India and just grease them so you felt better about yourself. You know, like, you know, your dick in the dirt for 2 days. Yeah, let's put her on the trailer, go up there and feel like we're musky anglers. You know, and I think a lot of it skews too. And again, Herbie's talked about it, and you lived through it up there. A lot of guys did, where there was that magical time of, oh, we have bulldogs and double tens, and there's no pressure, right? When that really first hit, which I think skewed a lot of expectations, because there was a lot of guys greasing fish for a long time, you know, of just like, whoa.
I think in today's world, you watch a video of Doug Wagner's, of ours, of Brent Scapes, of any of the guys that come up here and do content, and mm-hmm. we've all tried to put out content where you get skunked. Nobody watches that shit. They just, you can't turn that into a story that people want to watch. So you watch the video.
I got days of it, Glenn. I run my GoPros every day. If you can edit together a decade of skunk.
So. Yeah. So you watch these videos and, oh, it's a three fish day on Eagle. It's a seven fish day on Cedar for us, or it's Doug's got nine on the woods today.
Yeah.
And people watch this, and it's edited, so it's just boom, boom, boom. You're like, holy crap, you're just salivating. Like, I gotta get up there because this is just crazy. And yeah. The flip side of it is, 2 years ago, Scafe comes up here and in June. And they had a lights out trip, him and Ben Stone and Trevor. They caught 50s. They caught numbers of fish. They caught them on topwaters, on glides, on bucktails. They could throw a croc in the water and catch a muskie. Like, they could do no wrong. And then Brian comes back in August and he texts me 2 days in. He's like, where did these frickin' muskies go? He's like, because they just ain't coming. Like, they're just not coming to the boat.
Yeah.
And he was vocal and open about it, that trip just sucked. And he had no content for the winter. So you see all this content and all these videos and people talk about it on podcasts and think, oh man, that place is magic. And you come up here and all of a sudden you go 3 or 4 days without seeing a fish. And you're just like, this ain't fun. This just sucks. Like, I'm going to go walleye fishing just so I feel better about myself. Right, like it can change so fast up here. And it's not the land of magic anymore. Like, you literally, you have to work for them. There's just no easy solutions up here anymore.
I had a guy tell me one time, he said, it's not great, but it can be, which I've always loved. It's not great all the time. Yep. It can have its days. And I mean, you have a lights out week or a lights out, you know. It's just different. I mean, I don't think it's negative. It's just, like you said, it's where we're at in the cycle of things. And then you said the interesting thing about COVID, when that happened, the amount of people that got involved in the outdoors. And, you know, I'm sure you guys saw it at Bobby's, the same thing, the amount of new people, you know, and just interest. I mean, that's, you know, it's not again, I'm not saying it's bad. It just is what it is, which is, that, and then, like you said, coupled with more information. I mean, that's the one thing too. I mean, coming up in our era of information, it's hard to get your hands on. And now it's like you watch Glenn's video, or you watch Doug, whoever, you know, watch a Musky Shop video, watch a frickin' your buddy, anybody's video. That's better than what we used to have. You know, the amount of information that's available, which is huge.
Yeah, and I think a lot of us come out of COVID. It was like, what are we going to do? Like, you we were out fishing anyway, and we're just like, hey, let's just start recording. And we, like for myself and Dave and Kyla, we were influenced by Doug. We were influenced by Scaife. And like, we all kind of started at the same time, but you know, we were watching what they were doing. We're, you know, obviously influenced by Joe and Jim with the Musky Hunter stuff. And I just think it's a natural evolution. And then through COVID, you've seen so many more people pick up a musky rod and a GoPro, and it exploded everywhere. And a question for you, Jay, and this is something I wanted to ask you when, you know, talking with Steve about doing this through COVID, how much did you guys see at the musky shop that jump in new activity or names that you have never seen before on an order form? Like, how much did that change there? Because I could tell you at my wife's shop, a lot of the locals were coming in, buying that new, up here it's a lot of walleye fishing, buying that new walleye rod for the first time in probably 20 years because they couldn't do other stuff, so they were going out fishing. We've seen a lot of local people pick up musky fishing, you know, kind of dip their toes in the water. But for you, Jay, what was that like?
Yeah, there was a big boost that period. It was probably 2 years of it. I should say 2 winters of it. And I think the winter was really impactful because there was no shows. So that was the big boost for this information age that we're all living in right now. I think that's when it truly started. You know, it's just like anyone can put something on social media. So here's this overabundance of cool content. You know, it's just like anything from, you know, Doug Wegner's professional videos to Joe Schmo, like you said, Glenn, you know, a guy strapping on a GoPro going out there. Yeah, but he's got great footage of, you know, a 52 eating, you know, going around 18 times on a figure eight, you know, with a cool, you know, over the shoulder downward angle shot. And you could see this alligator, you know, like musky swimming around. It's just like, I mean, that's what people were digesting that period more than they were in previous years. So I think, yeah, that was a big change in the market. And obviously, you know, you couldn't really do a lot of shopping. So yeah, online, yeah, that was impacted. But I look at it, like I said, with that information boost of that whole time period, that 2 years, it was 2 winters, wasn't it, Steve, that there was no shows? Or was it just 1 year with
there
no
was
shows?
One fractional year.
Yeah.
And running, Glenn, to be honest with you, with that time, I remember sitting with my wife and I, you know, I don't even know what I do at Musky Shop, but I just, you know, I sat down and talked to Jody for like 2 hours about what to do, and then called Jim. And then I called Jay, like, this is what we need to prepare for, right? This is what I think, which was doom and gloom. And then you just woke up and then it was like lights out. Like, Jay, remember that, Jay? Like, us freaking out going, we're going out, you know, is the musky shop's lights going to be on? You know, here it is. We got, you know, this, that, and the other.
Yeah, the onset of that was
scary,
was kind of scary thinking back. Yeah, because, you know, we didn't know if we were going to be able to, you know, operate at all. No one knew.
Or is anybody going to be fishing?
Right.
Which is, you know, it's not a fixation on the virus. It's like you said, Glenn, it's a very, Jay and I have talked about it, Jim and I have talked about it. It's a very definitive time in the growth of this sport, hands down.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Where, yeah, you know, we had conversations about what can, you know, from Musky 360 to the Musky Shop to talking to the owners at Livingston, everybody was bracing for sheer and utter devastation. Right? Like, you know, so that's the thing.
Yeah. After die. Yeah. That was an impactful, you know, time period. And that's exactly what you should have done if you're in that business, if you're in any business that relies on customers.
This guy here, I don't know. Goodness gracious.
A kind of a follow-up question to that then, Jay, would be looking at, you know, I guess 4 or 5 years on from the worst of that COVID winter, whatever it was, what are sales like at the Musky Shop? Would you say it's, you know, it's more normal? Is it still sustained? Do you think from a buying perspective, you're still seeing, you know, the same type of people still interested in the industry? Because Steve and I talked about this off the air that I think inside of the muskie industry, people skew what the industry is. They think it's the boutique builders building baits in a basement in Minnesota, and he's going to sell 100 at $150. People think that that is the industry, and it's not. It's the big box stores. It's the big box companies that have to sell, you know, hundreds of units to keep this industry going. And I think we get caught up thinking it's the other way around. But, you know, do you think there's still, you know, a sustained market going?
Yeah, that's a good question. You know, you're referring to that custom boutique type stuff, which is it's a fraction. It's like musky fishing is a fraction to the fishing industry. Mm-hmm. So it is a very unique entity in that aspect. And yeah, I think it's sustaining, and it's ever growing with the musky shop, which is cool. We always strive to somehow try to influence and get kids involved, because it's the next generation and the generation after that. And a lot of people pigeonhole the muskie fishing current industry into like seniors, you know, and it's like, well, they're all dying off and they're getting too old to fish, you know, but it's just like, there's a heck of a lot of guys, you know, in the 30-year-old range generally that are super into it. And I don't know how they were inspired. Maybe it's something they picked up during that COVID period, just within the last 5 years, you know, after they became, you know, out of college or out of high school and got a job and got stable enough where they can, okay, I got some time now and I can invest in something I truly want to do. You know, it's just an inspiring sport like muskie fishing is, but I think it's really healthy right now. It's doing well.
Yeah. I mean,
I just got a message. I'm just going to jump on you here, Steve. Yeah. That sounds horrible. I just got a message from a guy that works with Muskies Canada, and he got telling me that his daughter went out fishing last year with them. She caught a really nice pike, didn't get the muskie she was after, but he went on to say that she really appreciates seeing my daughters on our videos and that inspires her. And of all the compliments that I ever get on any of our content, it's the ones that are positive about us showing our family, you know, whether it's my kids, mm-hmm. Dave's stepkids, my father-in-law, it always has to be about family. And to your point there, Jay, we at 54 Bus, we want this to be an inclusive sport. I want to see more women, more children, you know, more younger guys getting out and trying this. And I know it's not the type of sport that's for the faint of heart and the thin of wallet. Like, you got to have some money to do a lot of this, but it's changing. You can get a lot of really good gear. Like, you don't need Thorn Brothers custom rods like, you know, some of us have to do this. You can do this with like a lot of,
you can buy a muskie really shop shield rod stuff. Thanks, Glenn McDonald.
You can. You can. And I
shameless
think that we get caught up thinking you need the best of the best of the best, and we see it on Doug's videos, on our videos, on a lot of stuff, and you don't need that. I'm at a point in my life where I can afford, you know, some of that gear, or we have connections with these companies, but I could go out there with the cheapest Akuma rod and the cheapest Akuma reel or whatever it is and still have fun and get this done. So it is a really great time for people to get into this sport. And I think there's a market for everybody at every level right now. And I think that there's content and advice for everybody at every level of their, you know, muskie fishing game. And I think that we can talk to the beginner with beginner advice that's tailored to them. And then we can turn around and talk to the very best anglers that are coming up to Eagle that are looking for that niche within the niche of a spot that fish are only going to show up 2 days a year. And you can talk to those guys as well. Like, we're in that time period right now.
Well, and that's what I was going to say is if to your point, and we talked about it, I'm not afraid to talk about kind of that same tip, Glenn, that we talked about quote unquote industry, right? Which is, it is what people think sustains muskie fishing is a non-sustainable business model, right? You can't, 100 baits is nothing. you know, and
yeah,
there's not, it's kind of funny of what people think this is and what it really is, to your point, which is, you know, you cannot keep Andy Meyer's Lodge open on solely that. Yeah, I mean, you just can't. I mean, I was over there having dinner with, you know, went out fishing with Danny, and here I'm sitting there having dinner, and it's Grandpa and his two, I guess, you know, teenage daughters, right? A little bit of walleye, little bit of muskie, that, right? Here's a young couple, and I mean, I was, they were super nice, and I'm not poking fun, but they were like, I was, you know, the guy had already knew how to get it out of the net and take a picture. That was like their skill level. They were impressed that Calix knew how to unhook the fish that fast. Right. Does that make any sense of like they're, but that was what they're amazed by, yep. By like a 34 inch fish. And, you know, what a lot of people don't realize when they think muskie fishing, if that is what the driver of this whole business is, of normal people that are not obsessive, you know, and to the volume point of what people don't understand the volume, like the guys that are like, oh, it's the muskie industry. No, nowhere close, bud. Nowhere close, you know, as far as volume, you know, as far as like what it takes to, and I'll speak for, I can only say it for like Livingston. Do you know how many baits it takes to keep a company like that moving? More than everybody, take everything that's for sale at the show, put it together, and that's nowhere close, you know, and that's,
no, and
yeah, that's the skip. That's the thing. Just, it's like, it's a, sorry, go ahead.
No, I wanted to jump in there because I think you just said something interesting, that it's that volume of baits. I love the boutique baits. And This fall, I caught a couple of my last muskies on baits from two of the guys from Southern Ontario that build just amazing crankbaits. And like, let's face it, they're $150, $200 a piece. That's not sustainable for the industry as a whole. I just ordered a bait from a fella in Manitoba. It's, his company's called Shield Baits, which is just such an amazing name. And I think it's $130 or $140. And I'm at a position in my life where I can afford that and I want to support him. But this fall, through fishing, my father-in-law and my brother-in-law went up to Long-Legged and they caught the majority of their fish on a 14-inch Jake and a 13-inch Gramma that costs like $49. Mm-hmm. And we need that side of the industry to be strong in order to have the $130 baits be doing well as well. So I think it does matter, but we have to look at the big picture. Like if all of a sudden both the Brads in the industry, you know, Mayhem and Innovations just shut their doors, there's nobody taking that spot in the industry. No bedroom builder, basement builder is going to do what those guys do for this industry.
Good luck. And, yeah.
Like, yeah, so we have to support the whole industry. It can't just be support your buddies. It can't be just support Livingston. It has to work, you know, both ways, and we need the industry to be healthy so that we can buy $130 baits from a guy that hand paints them in his basement in Winnipeg, which I think is so cool, but I also think it's really cool that I can tell people to go to my wife's shop, get a 13-inch Gramma and Tennessee Shad, and you're going to rip it up on Eagle Lake. Like, you don't need the other stuff to do this, and that's, you know, back to what I said earlier. There's a spot in this sport for everybody, and I just, yeah. I like to see more people involved. I just think it's so positive.
Well, and to that point of just how I think it, from baseline angler interactions with people that are new in the sport are important, you know, of like making, like you said, I think your point is if it's inclusive, everybody wins, and it's not a financial win. It's a pot. The world works. You know what I'm saying? The lodges are open.
Yep.
The Shimanos of the world are making tranks available still, and we can still get musky rods that aren't, because, you know, there was a certain point people don't realize. I think the overarching thing, the availability of gear was so limited, it was unbelievable. It was so hard to get your hands on anything musky-esque. You know what I'm saying? Like 20 years ago, it was just like, okay, there's 10 baits. And we're in that kind of that heyday that I think is supported by support. Like, I don't know how to put it, but unknowingly supported by what people don't understand is happening, if that makes any sense. It is like people are like, oh yeah, whatever. You know, it's as all things like roads lead back, you almost go like, you have to tip your hat to Bucher on that front of, here's mass manufactured, here's a ton of baits. You know? And that was kind of the first kind of product line for the masses almost too. You know, and you go, yeah. Okay.
Oh, my wife would tell you that probably her most popular baits in the store are JBO baits, just because everybody recognizes the brand name. And obviously, you know, people are going to gravitate towards those other, you know, the big ones, the Medusas, the Bulldogs, and the Double Cowgirls, like, you know, from their respective companies. But when people see, you know, JBO baits on the wall, they instantly recognize it. And the price is right. People will grab it. These are the average weekend anglers that are coming to Canada to fish for 1 week a year. And they buy those things up like crazy. And if she had, you know, a boutique bucktail on the wall that costs twice as much, there's going to be some fanatics that will absolutely buy them. But most people will look at it and be like, ooh, that's expensive. And I don't see the difference. So again, there's two sides to that story.
We always try to direct people to, you know, buying within your means too, and getting the proper setup. You know, it's like you were talking about the boutique, you're in a position to buy boutique baits and stuff like that. Well, you're at an advanced level, you know, and, you know, you look at the person who's at a more inexperienced entry level. You don't want to start with stuff like that because, you know, there goes your budget right out the window. You know, it's like, be economical about it, get the right stuff. Catch fish. Bingo. You're set up, you know, to start.
I have a $500 budget to get musky fishing. You give them a spool of Power Pro and a bar fighter. there it is, boys. The rest is up to you. I know.
You definitely don't want to get into buying $100 or $200 baits and leave one on the bottom of Eagle Lake, because the amount of stories that we've heard up here of guys losing a headlock or, you know, some of the other big expensive crankbaits, and they're just heartbroken. We always look at it as it's just a tool. Like, I'm willing to sacrifice it for a fish. It's just a tool at the end of the day. And does the fancy paint look awesome? Yeah, of course it does. And does it look cool hanging on the wall? Yeah, it does. But it's going to look a hell of a lot cooler in a net shot inside the mouth of a 48 or 50 inch fish. So we always try to just tell people, buy what you can buy, use what you can use. And if you lose it, don't lose any sleep over it. Just get another one when you can afford it, or, you know, whatever works for you, because you're not going to catch them if you're not out there, and you're not going to catch them, or you're not going to throw into the dirty areas if you're worried about losing the only black and silver bucktail you brought to Canada. Like, you have to be willing to put it out there.
I guarantee they can drive up to Bobby's and buy one, though. It's freaking, how bad, just picking your brain though, Gwen, like, there in town, you got like QSL and, you know, you guys are separated by a good distance. Looking at the prices up there, I mean, how's that translating for you guys on stuff out of the States, like price wise?
Shipping from the States just sucks. To get anything shipped up from the States is really expensive. I can ship the same package back. Like, if Jay sent me something from the Muskie shop and it cost $50 to ship, I could turn around and ship that same package back for probably 25 Canadian. So there's this weird thing with shipping. It costs so much for us to get it up here.
Gotcha.
A lot of guys will get the guys that go to the shows to bring some stuff back for them. If there's something, you know, specific you need, a lot of the shops up here now, whether it's Lake of the Woods Sports in Kenora, my wife's shop, QSL, they're all carrying similar but slightly different stuff. So you do have the ability to get it, but yeah, the prices are terrible up here. It just between the shipping and the brokerage and the duties. And I see some of the stuff that comes in through my wife's shop and I'm just like, wow, like the prices are crazy. And again, I'm at a different point in my musky fishing journey where I'm fortunate to work with a lot of these big companies. And I feel terrible for the average, you know, guy or that 20-year-old kid that's maybe he's trying to go to college or whatever, buy his first truck or his first boat, and you tell him to just run over to the muskie shop and get set up for muskie fishing. Like, that's a conversation that just hurts. Like, there's just no easy way around it. But it's a hobby. It's, you know, I'm not into, you know, street bikes. I don't have a Harley. I'm not into, you know, whatever else, you know, kind of hobbies you're into. I'm not into shooting. I don't have 20 guns. Like, up here, people have different hobbies. This is my hobby. This is what I do for fun. This is my stress dump. This is where Dave and I go out on the water. We listen to, you know, heavy metal music, and we laugh. You know, we just sit out there and just have a good time. If we catch fish, great. And for us, it's our thing to do. And I always think, you know, you can only have one or two hobbies as you get older. Like, when you're young, you can have 10. You get older and life gets in the way. And there's a lot worse hobbies than musky fishing, because you go out, you fish all day, you come home at night, and you're spent, you're going to bed, you're not getting yourself in trouble. Like, it's a pretty good way to spend your free time.
Very cool. Well, boys, we've just been blabbing here. Glenn, thank you so much for coming on. That was a hoot. We will definitely have you.
Yeah, great job, Glenn.
Here, you know. Sorry for all. Wait, me and Jay are going to ask you dumb stuff. You knew coming on beforehand. It's going to get out there and as weird as we can make it. But anyway, guys, I'm sure if you've not seen Glenn from 54 or Bust, you've not visited he and Dave's YouTube channel, you can make it to the tube of you. Get over there. What do they say? Like and subscribe. My dudes, smash that like button. Smash it.
I haven't said like and subscribe on a video for 4 years.
Me either.
I haven't watched a video
in there.
Do whatever you want.
Now it's.
I will say one thing. We got something really cool coming for this off season with all our footage from last year. I'm working on it right now. I think it's going to be something similar to what some other guys have done, but I think we're taking it, you know, to a different level or a different place. I think it's going to be really fun. Looking forward to it. You know, check us out, 54 Bus on YouTube, socials. You'll find us. I think, you know, we got some really cool stuff. And Jay, like they do on those goofy cooking shows, I'm watching you, and I'm going to have some underwater videos coming, and it's going to be game on.
Oh boy. All right, guys.
Good.
Jay Bird, say a vita Zane.
Bye, guys. Thanks a lot.
Later, boys.
I see a jerkbait, and I want it painted black. All colors work today as long as they are black. I see the ski swim by, they just don't want to bite. I pull the swig out and let that darkness shine. I see a jerkbait and I want it painted black. All colors work today as long as they are black.